Well, I'm delighted to welcome now to Talk Radio Europe, Sean Berry. Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
Hi, nice to be here.
It's great to have you on, Sean. Now, let me just get this right, because there's a few things I just need to clear up before we go on to the book. Well, I had you down as deputy leader of the Green Party, but I think I'm out of date now, aren't I?
Yeah, no, I'm co-leader of the Green Party in England and Wales,
right.
Alongside my colleague Jonathan Barley. We job share, being leader of the party. It's quite common among Greens.
So what happened to the other co-leader before? Is she still there?
Caroline Nugent, yes. was our co-leader with Jonathan before. She's still our only MP in Parliament. She's still very, very prominent. But actually, leading the party, planning for the next general election, planning for London elections coming up soon, that's my job now. And I'm going to be doing, hopefully, as good a job as her.
So,
it would be nice to be as well known as her.
Yes. So you're a Member of Parliament?
I'm a member of the London Assembly.
Right, okay.
I've stood for Mayor of London twice. I came third last time, and I'm aiming for higher this time in 2020.
Like number one, maybe?
Hopefully number one, but certainly it's got the Conservatives in my sight, because they've been quite useless over the past few years. And I think what we really need is a green mayor of a city. I think we could do an awful lot to show how to deal with climate change, how to build sustainable lives in a city like London. I think we deserve the chance.
I think the current mayor's getting a bit of a hard time as well, isn't he, from people. So, I mean, there's lots of things, as I've said to you off air, lots of things we see on the news and just seems to be... the crime wave in London at the moment, you know, it's very prominent early on in the year, that news.
Yeah, there is. We've got a real crime problem at the moment in London. I mean, it's hard to know exactly where that's come from, but certainly since I've been on the London Assembly, I've been pointing out things like cuts to youth services,
yeah,
cuts to council services. They've got to be having effects on how young people are being supported not to be doing crime. And there are lots of influences trying to push young people into crime as well. So it's a genuine problem. And we've got problems on our transport system as well. We're running out of money to pay for buses and things. So I don't think the mayor's doing necessarily a very good job right now.
Well, I remember I used to run youth groups in Coventry, and we'd get these grants and we'd go and buy a whole lot of new equipment. We'd have like 70 or 80 young people from all over the city just come to our youth group on a Friday night, and it kept them off the streets. Right. The police were saying, you know, it's on a Friday, there's not so much crime around, and it took a lot of looking after them. But then suddenly the grants weren't available anymore. We were struggling financially to keep the thing going, and it was purely by people's voluntary giving that we were able to keep going. But it's a recipe for disaster, isn't it? I don't think they realise how much these groups actually do.
No, it's very undervalued, youth work. I'm doing an event here in City Hall next week to celebrate youth workers. So many of them have been laid off. So many of them are struggling to keep their projects going from like philanthropic donations. But the money should be coming from council, should be coming from the government, because it saves money in the end if you're not letting children get involved in things that get them into trouble and affect their whole lives.
Yeah. Let me just ask you a quick question before we get into the book. Now, I know, because I've seen likes of your predecessors on the TV, I've seen yourself, and I know that the Green Party has a lot of other policies, but I think that needs to, I know you're communicating that. Is that an issue? Because it's been so well known for its environmental work over the years, are you always addressing that as an issue, that you need to tell people, look, we've got views on employment, we've got views on every aspect of life in the UK?
Yeah, I think more and more we're known for caring just as much about people and society as we do about the planet. And for us, we take that ecological perspective, which means looking at the big picture, looking how everything interacts. And for us, yeah, social issues are just as important as green issues, but neither can be ignored. They're all part of the bigger picture of getting things right, building for a future for everybody. It's why we do so much work for young people, really, because we really care about the future.
Yeah. Well, let's get onto the book then, 50 Ways to Help the Planet. And what was the reason, I mean, when did you have time, first of all, to write the book, all that you're doing? You must be a busy person.
Yeah, so I squeezed it in between elections. But yeah, no, I mean, what it is, I wrote a series of books about being greener 10 years ago. And my publisher came to me last year and said, you know, should we update your book? And I said, yeah, let's do that, because some of the advice I've been given has gone out of date.
Yeah.
There's new issues. Let's see, stick much more of an issue than they used to be. Let's do that. And then I went back into the books I wrote 10 years ago, and actually very disappointed to see so little has changed. So many of the things I'm saying that we should do, and I don't just talk about your own lifestyle in my book. I talk about ways to persuade your workplace to change its ways, to persuade your council to change its ways. Quite a lot of those things we're no further on 10 years later. And it really, you know, the things we've been seeing this year from the Intergovernmental Panel, the fact that we're running out of time to do something about it, plus at the same time, we're really starting to see the extreme weather that we've always said will start to happen if climate change takes hold. I think people are starting to realise we don't have time to waste and we must be doing everything we can. So, yeah, the book's a mixture of things like tips on how to make the most of your efforts at home to save energy, how to get hold of things where you can repair stuff rather than just buy things that are throwaway, tips on getting secondhand clothes, because I like to wear nice clothes like anybody does, but the fashion industry is incredibly wasteful, so I like to look for secondhand clothes. I've got tips on doing that, tips on how to use your home more efficiently, like if you've got which I guess you will have in Spain, hot days, you know, making sure you've got air current running through the house, ways of leaving windows open, using curtains strategically so that you're not reliant on so much air conditioning. And obviously in colder climates in the winter, ways of keeping the house warm, just simple things like putting a curtain in front of the front door can save you quite a lot of money and keep the house nice and cozy.
A nice snake. My mum used to have a snake draft excluder.
No, exactly. I've got one of those. Actually, mine's a dog, but it's basically a long sausage thing that I made that I put under the door in winter. And that, you know, the difference it makes to how drafty my hallway is extreme. So there are very simple things you can do to reduce carbon, reduce your impact on the world, and most of them save you money. Not all of them save you time, because quite a lot of them are quite crafty and interesting ways to fix things, and I wrote another whole book about mending things. I do like working with my hands.
Oh, that'd be great. Now, I don't want you to give us any kind of because here in Spain, I don't want you to feel like sorry for us, but it gets cold in the winter here in Spain. I know you probably think it, but actually the houses here are built for the summer, so it's, you can get really quite drafty and cold. So we're finding, like, going back to the old days where one room's warm and the rest of the house is cold. But I think there's some great ideas there about putting the curtain up, certainly. Now I want to ask you this one, because we have a wood burner fire which we use in the winter. Is that better for the environment or not?
Ooh, so there is a bit of an issue with using wood burners in areas with high air pollution. Certainly in London, we're having to more or less say to people building new homes, people thinking of getting them, please don't, because we've got real problems with pollution from vehicles, and it's the same kind of sort of particles come off. From a carbon point of view, if you're burning wood that grew recently, though, it's fairly carbon neutral.
Right.
Apart from the energy needed to transfer the wood around to your home. It isn't, you know, you're burning carbon that was recently captured from the atmosphere, so you're not adding overall to that. So it is better to use a fuel like that than a fossil fuel, for example. But you've really got to watch out for the air pollution aspects of it.
Just on a bit of a grander scale, I want to ask you this, because I think what you're doing with this book is you're trying to inform us about ways in which we can make a difference. And there's not many people I know who think, you know what, I want to be environmentally unfriendly, you know, but it's just the fact that people just carry on and in a routine of doing it the way they've always done it. And we're getting these conflicting reports now, aren't we, that we've had some extreme weather here in Spain. We had literally this last weekend, we had a whole year's rain in one area and it flooded an area. And following that on Facebook and Twitter and so on, you get people saying, oh, that's climate change, and other people saying, no, it isn't, don't be silly, and that sort of stuff. And we're getting these conflicting reports saying the world's always gone up and down, you know, with temperatures over hundreds and thousands of years. It's always been the case. And so it's difficult when you've got two groups at loggerheads over this, when you're caught in the middle. So really, where is the evidence lying?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's really no question now that climate change is real, and that we have already seen an increase in temperature of about a degree since we started. Yeah. Burning all the fossil fuels that have been there for millions of years. And it is going to continue having an effect. Even the carbon we've already put into the atmosphere is going to heat things more than that. The challenge is keeping it below 1.5 degrees, because after that, we know that we will see more of these kinds of incidents. And it is hard to put any one hurricane, any one severe weather event down to climate change. But what all the models tell us, what all our experience so far with the warming we've already seen shows, is that we will see more of these kinds of things under conditions of climate change. So I don't think there's much doubt now that you know, 1 in 100 year floods that are happening. We've seen the worst floods in Wales for 30 years as well in the last spate of bad weather in the UK. These things are the result of a changing climate, and changing weather patterns are going to follow from that. So there is no question. You can say very clearly to your friends who say, is it a real thing? It is. Everybody, all the scientists now are agreeing on this. What is in question is how quickly we act on it, what kinds of things we can do most quickly, what's the best way to invest money in reducing our carbon emissions. So there's a big debate at the moment in the UK about nuclear power, for example.
Yeah.
And, you know, theoretically, nuclear power emits less carbon because it's not burning fossil fuels, it's burning nuclear fuel. But building a nuclear power station takes a lot of energy, so much concrete, I believe. And then you've got the long-term effects of the waste and all of that. So actually the money you need to put in to all of that safety, all of that concrete, all of that waste management means that you end up paying more for that electricity in the end. And actually what we should be doing is investing more in renewable, proper renewable energy, solar and wind. The more we invest in that, what we've seen in America, where it's got much more popular to do solar power, is that the actual price of doing it goes down. You get economies of scale. And so now the best thing to invest in states in America like California, with the 20th one, by miles, is solar power. Even if you're a complete capitalist, that's what you'd invest in. So I think we've got to be looking at things with a future in mind, and not just taking what seems to be a simple solution. The same goes for gas. You know, it's less dirty than coal, but putting all our investment into new gas isn't actually the best investment when we get more out of proper renewable energy in the end.
Interesting here. Sorry to cut over you there, Sean. Interesting here in Spain, we had solar panelling, and people were told take up solar panelling. You know, you'll save a bit of money as well. It's all, you know, but everyone's a winner, sort of thing. So people did it, and then the Conservative government, the Partido de Popular, put a tax on the money that people were saving from the solar panelling. And now I think the new government that's in, Socialist PSOE, they are. I think they're aiming to reverse that. So that's positive. But it's amazing, isn't it? How these things go.
Spain did have some of the most generous sort of incentives. So if you're able to generate electricity and sell it back into the grid, you'd get a bit of a bonus for that if it was solar energy. And that's what we've just seen the government in the UK trying to reduce our similar sort of incentives as well. In America, eventually you get to the point where these things don't need incentives. But it's cruel and rather irrational to take them away artificially when they're doing a good job and getting more people to install them, because they really are, you know, building for the future. It's good investments to get people to do.
Let's talk about plastics for a moment. I know we're up against the clock a little bit. Let's talk about plastics. That's been a big thing recently with David Attenborough's Blue Planet. We've all been watching it. And there's been a shift, hasn't there, in the mood, I think, over plastics, at least whether we're seeing the policies happen or not. There's been a shift in people's mindsets, I think.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I had to take out of when I was updating the tips that I'd written before was the need for a plastic bag tax, because obviously we have one in the UK now, and it's worked amazingly. The amount, we save billions and billions of plastic bags already. And if you watch things like David Attenborough programs, I think that's what shocks people, seeing something recognisable, a plastic bag, a ring thing from a can of beer or a cotton bud, and to see that in the sea, doing harm directly to wildlife, actually, you know, harming an animal, but being able to picture that thing as something you've used in the past, potentially that is the thing you used and sent to landfill and it ended up in the sea. That's really brought it home to people that everything we do does have an impact on the planet and can cause harm. And so people are thinking very hard now about how to reduce plastic.
So I know the Green Party would have a lot of differences, even with Labour and the Lib Dems, and certainly with the Conservatives. But when the Conservative government brings in a policy like that, Surely politics goes out the window. You just want the best things to be happening, surely.
Yes, we are pleased that the government's taken up the cause of reducing plastic. Obviously, it's kind of late, and there's lots more they could be doing. They're also trying to get fracking done, which is driving us up the wall. On the plastics, I think there's been a real change in public opinion. The Conservative government's recognised it, and they are now consulting on some new policies. It's maybe not quick enough, and I worry they're very susceptible to being lobbied by big companies who maybe don't want to bring in big changes to how they manufacture things, but I think it's absolutely necessary, and we'll keep pushing to make sure there's no backsliding.
I was surprised that they went with the sugar tax, because I thought there'd be a lot of lobbying going on there, but credit due to them, I suppose, on that one. Just finally, let's get a couple of tips, because I know we're going to run out of time. So you talk about cooking and eating. I wonder if you got any tips there on greener ways of cooking and eating.
Oh, right, okay. Well, yeah, interesting. What I have noticed and what I've done for a while is when you cook pasta, you don't actually need to leave the water boiling the whole time. And this is a tip, and it's really savvy.
All right.
A little bit out the need to use the increased use of food banks. And what we've noticed there is people who are going to food banks and picking up dried food that needs to be boiled are quite reluctant sometimes to do it. They want canned food because of the amount of gas energy and the amount of long length of time they have to use the ring to cook things. But with pasta, if you can get it up to a good boil and then you put a tight-fitting lid on it, you can actually turn off the heat and just leave it sealed up and sitting in very, very warm water, not boiling anymore.
Yeah.
And after basically the same amount of cooking time, you'll go back and it'll be ready.
And you're saving money on your electricity bills as well.
You can save money there, and it really just genuinely does work, and is necessary, and is a real money saver as well as a saver of energy. So that's a really, really, really good tip.
Yeah.
The other thing about food is, you know, use your leftovers. Don't do food waste, even though it's not costing you anything.
Oh, I'm awful for that. I'm awful for that.
It's a huge waste. So get your leftovers and reheat them, reuse them. Learn to make recipes out of bits of leftover things because, yeah, good soup will last you a couple of days after you've made a roast dinner, and it's actually really, really tasty.
Mm, you're making me hungry right now, actually. Listen, Sean, we're out of time, but it's been great chatting with you. It really has. And are you going to run for London Mayor again? Can we put you down for that?
I hope so. We do need a Green Mayor in London. And I've done it twice now. And I was fourth and then I was third, so it's time to win next time.
Fantastic. Well, wish you all the very best, Sean. Thanks for coming on. The book's called 50 Ways to Help the Planet, Easy Ways to Live a Sustainable Life. And it's available if you go to our website, tre.radio. Sean, wish you all the best with the book. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers.